And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is bombshells. Each of my guests is describing a bombshell, whether it's in business or geopolitics. My next guest wrote about the bombshell that exploded on Johnson & Johnson when a whistleblowing salesperson exposed Procrit for the dangerous drug that it is. We'll discuss her book, Blood Feud. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. That's the same number that you'll use right now to call in to win either two sandwiches or two salads from Urbane Cafe. Two locations to serve you, one here in Ventura at 4350 Telephone Road in the Barnes & Noble Plaza, the other in Oxnard at 1730 East Gonzales Road, the intersection of Gonzales and Rose. Be the third caller, 639-0008, and you will win two free sandwiches or two free salads to Urbane Cafe. My next guest, Kathleen Sharp, is a journalist and author of four nonfiction books. She's written for the New York Times Magazine, Parade, Elle, Playboy, Fortune, and many others. She's produced segments for National Public Radio's Morning Edition, and she's appeared and consulted on film documentaries for the Turner Movie Classics and the Bio Channel and Bravo. Kathleen's many awards include a first-place prize for investigative reporting from the Society of Professional Journalists, an economic fellowship to study at the Graduate School of Business at the University of Washington, and a healthcare fellowship from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communications. Kathleen is an avid runner. She lives in Santa Barbara with her family. Joining us from Santa Barbara. Hi, Kathleen. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Billy.
Well, thank you for being our guest here on Brainstorming. Now, this is a story that many of my listeners may not know, even though it has a lot of local roots to it. So let's set the stage. Procrit, I'm pronouncing that right? Procrit?
Sure. Uh-huh.
Procrit is one of the first biotech blockbusters, and it was promised to be the start of the golden age in medical care. Amgen, our own local company here in Ventura County, developed Procrit the base drug for Procrit back in the 1980s. It's an anti-anemia drug or a blood booster. Amgen then licensed the drug to Johnson & Johnson, and it's sold today by both companies under the brand names Procrit, Epogen, and Arnicep. It generates billions of dollars in revenue for both companies. So far, so good, right? But it's sort of the typical story, I guess, of a biotech company developing a drug, licensing it to Big Pharma. But what went wrong in this case, Kathleen?
Well, the main thing that went wrong is that the drug was not adequately tested. Early on in the 80s, there were signs that Procrit, or EPO as we'll call it, could grow tumor cells, but in the regulatory process, that sort of was overlooked, and the FDA gave its stamp of approval to both Amgen and J&J, so the drugs were let out into the market. Typically, however, drug companies are asked to test their drugs in larger patient populations, and the FDA indeed asked that of both the companies. But alas, that never really happened.
Well, when you say it never really happened, I mean, were both companies, Johnson & Johnson and Amgen, flying in the face of the FDA's request, or did they falsify documents, or what exactly happened there?
Well, a number of things happened, and let's start with the regulatory process. In the early 90s, there were laws that allowed drug companies to pay the regulators for improved and a quicker fast-tracking of drugs. So what you had is sort of the companies that were supposed to be regulated now in the halls of, you know, the regulators. So that was one aspect. But another was that in their enthusiasm for these drugs, the companies tested patients for higher doses or for other uses besides that which had been approved by the FDA. So they did lots and lots of tests, but not the ones that were needed. And, you know, both parties really sort of share responsibility for what went wrong.
Well, it almost sounds as though the FDA is more to blame in this particular case because they asked for certain things, they didn't receive them, they didn't do any follow-up, or if they received the wrong information, they didn't follow up to see if it was the correct information.
Well, that's a great point, and actually that's what I thought initially, but then I realized once I got into the FDA that under Bush, for example, or even under Clinton, many regulatory spots in the FDA were being filled by people from the pharmaceutical industry. And a great example in my book is a gentleman by the name of Daniel Troy, who now works for a pharmaceutical. He was head of the chief counsel, Office of Chief Counsel, and he was overseeing all of the warning letters that the FDA was sending out to Johnson & Johnson and Amgen. But he would sort of, you know, warn the staff to not be so hard on these companies. Let's not send out all of these warning letters. So what you have is sort of a collusion between the pharmaceutical industry and the regulators.
All right. My guest is Kathleen Sharp, author of the book Blood Feud, The Man Who Blew the Whistle on One of the Deadliest Prescription Drugs Ever. Now, Kathleen, let's talk a little bit about that whole FDA process. Now, I'm not condoning any illegal activities to sell any product, which clearly was part of the problem here. But with the high cost of producing and introducing a new drug in the United States, I mean, we're talking $1 billion or more. Doesn't it make sense for the biotech companies to do what Amgen did, which is develop drugs and then later license them to big pharma? Because the challenge is this, that any drug company with our antiquated patent system here in the United States, where patents are only good for 17 years, it takes you time to develop the drug, then you have to go through the FDA process of getting approval. By the time you go through that slow regulatory system at the FDA, you've only got a few years left to actually sell the drug once it's approved by the FDA. And so you've got to make as much profit on all of that research and development that you've done to, in order to catch up for the 5, 10, 15 years of regulatory process that you went through. So in what ways would modernizing our patent system have improved this Procrit situation?
Well, I think we should take a step back, first of all, because in the case of EPO, this was a taxpayer-subsidized drug. The National Institutes of Health, through taxpayer funds, sort of jump-started the research on this drug. I spent many, many millions of dollars developing it. And then there were many laws that sort of protected EPO from other competition, including an orphan drug law. So this wasn't exactly a pure free market sort of development. Even from the get-go, it was really subsidized by our money. In fact, it was so much so that the inventor of EPO, Goldwasser, a wonderful scientist, Eugene Goldwasser, very respected, strongly believed that the profits from EPO should be returned to the public domain since we had subsidized it for all these years. And when you look at some of these drugs, you realize that, you know, yes, the drug companies say that they are putting all this research into or all this money into research, but actually a lot of the money goes into packaging and marketing and advertising, and the actual research is done on, public universities.
Well, that may be true, Kathleen, but I think overall, whether the money goes to marketing or whether it goes to research or how it's divvied up by the drug company, they still put out a bundle of money when they develop the drug themselves. Now, in this case with EPO, it was taxpayer subsidized, so it clearly is a different set of circumstances than a normal drug that goes through the Blood Feud. And just remember, call in at 639-0008. You can win two sandwiches or two salads. We've had one caller, 639-0008. I'll take the third caller to win two sandwiches or two salads from Urbane Cafe. Kathleen, back to you. The protagonists in your story are Mike Druxbury, Dean McClelland, and Jan Schlitzelman. Talk to us about how these three people, how their lives intersected to create the story.
Well, Mark Druxbury and Dean McClelland were actually very good buddies, and they went on a road trip to sell this wonderful drug that they really believed in. I mean, Johnson & Johnson at the time was the most admired company in the world, and, EPO was a miraculous biotech drug. But as Mark, in particular, gets out into the world, he finds that his company is telling him to do things that he knows are not quite kosher. For example, Johnson & Johnson's unit begins to compete with its so-called partner, Amgen, in ways that he thinks are unethical. But even more disturbing is that later, the Johnson & Johnson unit begins to tell its reps, like Dean and Mark, to sell the drug off-label or to promote it off-label, which, as we know, is illegal. Doctors can prescribe drugs off-label, but companies cannot promote it that way. And so that was the beginning of sort of the good buddy road trip gone bad.
Okay, now that's an interesting way of putting it. And it's also the beginning of something that is highly illegal. So these two guys, best buddies, they start to split apart. Tell us the story of what led to Mike Druxbury's final termination from the company.
Well, Mark Druxbury sort of had a nervous breakdown when he was trying to alert his bosses to what he thought was illegal marketing. And he had to take medical leave, and during that time he was given all kinds of different drugs himself to get healthy that really didn't work well at all. And his medical condition got even worse. But at some point he did recover, he goes back to the company, and he's even more fired up to sort of blow the whistle. And that's when he and his buddy Dean sort of split ways for a while, because Dean cannot believe, he just refuses to believe that Johnson & Johnson could be guilty of anything wrong. And at some point, we meet up with Jan Schlickman, who maybe some of you listeners remember him from a wonderful movie called A Civil Action. Jan was played by John Travolta in this Oscar-nominated film, and he really is this wonderful crusading attorney who goes after corporations like Grace and Johnson & Johnson.
All right, and so that's how their paths come together. In the book, Kathleen, you assert that in Blood Feud that the United States healthcare system is dysfunctional. In what ways did you personally, firsthand, see some of this dysfunctional behavior as you were doing the research for this book?
Well, some of the documents that I got from Mark and Dean sort of put it out there in black and white. For example, drug reps in this case were taught how to give away free drug to some of their top oncology clients. And a lot of times these drug reps would look the other way when the oncologist would bill Medicare and other insurance companies for the free drug that they received. Another way that we see dysfunction is when some of these doctors are hired as advocates for a drug, and they are sent around the country to speak, and they're paid for speaking at wonderful resorts to tout the off-label use of drugs, even though there are risks that these doctors may not be aware of. And again, you know, these doctors are paid, and the patients often have no idea that this is going on. And actually, they really should be, since they're the end users of our healthcare system.
Well, without a doubt, they need to be more educated. Patients need to take a more active role in that. But I want to come back to the billing of Medicare, because this is no small problem, as you point out in the book. The overbilling, the turning a blind eye, taking a free drug from the pharmaceutical company and then billing Medicare. $2 billion is billed to Medicare annually for the EPO drug, one of its three brand names. So this is a significant dollar figure that you're talking about, and you're really talking about an illegal activity here as well. So I guess, does this really reflect badly on the healthcare system, or does this reflect badly on the business practices of Johnson & Johnson during this particular time period?
Well, it reflects badly on all, because what Johnson & Johnson did is no different than what Pfizer or Eli Lilly, Bristol-Myers Squibb have been accused of doing, and have actually paid out billions and billions of dollars in fines over the last few years. And, you know, it's very hard for patients to be informed of all of these things when they're not revealed or there's no way for them to discover it. So that was one of the shocking things that I found in this story, is how little power and how little information patients do have about, you know, whether or not their doctor is taking money or whether or not their doctor is participating in a study. And actually, the entire healthcare system in this country is sort of tainted by the lack of disclosure and the overweening influence that for-profit entities have in public health, really.
Well, what would be the solution then? My guest is Kathleen Sharp, author of the book Blood Feud. If the system is this dysfunctional, as you describe, what would be some solutions, Kathleen?
Well, I really don't suggest any, but I do look to people in Germany, where EPO was not used as aggressively as it was here in this country. Doctors were giving EPO to patients at 3 and 4 times the normal dose, and you don't see that in other countries like France, Italy, Japan. So it would behoove us to look at their healthcare systems and see what's going on. A lot of doctors that I have talked to sort of advocate a single-payer system so that there's not all these middlemen taking a percentage of payments and sort of bloating the healthcare system to the enormous size it is right now.
Well, without a doubt, the healthcare system is enormous, and the single-payer system is a move more towards socialized medicine, which, as you described in some of the countries that you look to, is the norm there. But
Japan's not really a socialized medicine. What we have is a combination of for-profit entities, non-profit entities, charities, and government sort of working together to form a healthcare system. And that, it, to me, seems really exciting and perhaps beneficial.
The Japanese system. All right. My guest is Kathleen Sharp. Now, Kathleen, I guess two questions come out of this in the bigger picture, looking at it. First of all, we talked about the FDA's role in all of this. Is the FDA too harsh or too lenient on approving drugs for use in the United States?
Well, some would say it's too harsh, and in many ways there are lots of wonderful drugs that could be out there in the market to help pediatric patients or cancer patients that are not yet approved. On the other hand, there are, you know, there's been very many drugs that have been recalled, Vioxx, in the last few years, for example, that have had a really detrimental influence on patients and a huge cost to the system to, you know, tune of billions and billions of dollars. I'm not a politician. I am not a, you know, I'm simply a storyteller who kind of conveys this story as contrasted with an individual who is trying to blow the whistle on corrupt practices and looking at the system itself.
Well, then a follow-on question, and this is the one that's a puzzler to me. Why aren't blockbuster drugs and biotech companies being formed and developing these drugs in large numbers outside of the United States? Why do we see all of the activity in biotech here in the U.S.?
Well, we don't see it all here in the U.S. We see it a lot in Germany and Amsterdam and Norway. Bayer actually is a company that's based outside of the U.S., and more there are international companies that are developing exciting new drugs. Everyone has to have a place here in the U.S., all of these companies, because that's where, you know, enormous amounts of money can be made. But, you know, this is now an international business. It's not just based in the U.S.
My guest is Kathleen Sharp, author of the book Blood Feud. Kathleen, you've got an interesting opportunity coming up this week. You're going to be doing something fun on Thursday that most of us don't get a chance to do. Tell us about it.
Well, I get to have a party, and you all are invited. Jan Schlickman is flying out from Boston to join us at the Los Angeles Press Club on Thursday, September 22nd, around 7 o'clock at the Steve Allen Theater. And Jan will be talking about this case that is still in the U.S. District Court, and I'll be happy to talk about the book to anyone who's interested. So we're really looking forward to a great turnout. And I encourage your listeners to come, too.
Oh, that is great. My guest has been Kathleen Sharp, author of the book Blood Feud, the man who blew the whistle on one of the deadliest prescription drugs ever. Kathleen, if people are intrigued by the story, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I'd love it if they come and visit me at KathleenSharp.com. They can also visit Dutton's website, since that's my publisher. Bloodfeud.info is another website, but really just going anywhere on the Internet and looking for my name and Blood Feud will bring them to a few different websites.
That's Kathleen Sharp. That is great. Kathleen, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Billy. Thank you.